Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Evan Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and we're in studio today talking about how to really move forward the offsite solutions. And we're picking up the momentum where we left off from episode one of this deep dive series with Ross and Eric. That was show 321 titled System Built Construction from Those Who Live It. And we really wanted to start this whole conversation around really being guides to the people who are the experts living when it comes to offsite solutions. And today we get to have Dennis and Rich, and we're going to hear their stories and what they're all about with through Housing Innovation Alliance, a really cool organization that we were part of at the University of Denver. And the final episode is going to be kind of talking through the next, and they have this really cool program called the Pitch Fest and all kinds of cool stuff that we'll be talking through this conversation. But today it's all about kind of talking about where we've come from and where we most importantly want to go when it comes to offsite solutions. So the main message that I want to convey to you is that we're going to be talking about lessons from the creators and managers of the offsite roadmap. And that's really the key conversation around today. And continue the momentum and education from the last event at DU. And upcoming next June will be the next conference. And we get to bring all these different leaders and perspectives for offsite solutions that Dennis and Rich have a lot of stories to talk through and data to go along with that. And they're in the trenches. If you're not paying attention to Housing Innovation Alliance, you need to. We'll be putting information in the show notes where they're out going to different projects and all kinds of cool case studies. So without further ado, let's get in to know Dennis and then Rich and have as much fun as possible with the team at the Housing Innovation Alliance. Lock and load, tribe. Dennis, what's your favorite beverage?
My favorite beverage. So I think I'd have to kind of to put this in context, it's going to be a seasonal choice. But where we're heading now, into the fall, getting ready for winter. We talked a little bit about ski season earlier. It's going to be a whiskey old fashioned for me all day long.
Oh, man, I can't wait to have one of those on the slopes with you. That's just music to my ears and the holidays and the snow. And you kind of have to have that stuff where you're like, it's cold right now, right? And the changes of the season. What's your favorite place you've traveled, Dennis?
So another one, I can't really answer this one directly because I've been blessed to have the opportunity to travel all over the world for my work, part of my career at the Alliance. I know we'll talk a little bit about that later. And for me, it's really about the people and the intent that you're traveling with more so than just the location, kind of wraps into its whole package. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to lean on my most recent trip which was also in my top five for sure. I just got back from one of my best friend's weddings in Flims, Switzerland, which could not be more of a fairy tale type place to visit. We happened to be there, you know, in the Alps, riding gondolas up and hiking around these beautiful mountains while there was a balloon festival going off in the distance. So while you're sipping your coffee in the morning, you're looking at the mountains, you're getting a chance to hike around and just kind of see this entire environment and atmosphere. And it was a place that's about 2 hours south of Zurich. So you're kind of really in this remote location, just immersed in kind of the Swiss culture and just around a lot of welcoming people. And to have the opportunity to do that with friends that I've had for over 20 years and celebrate their wedding with them made that probably one of the most, like I said, one of the top five places I've been to.
Awesome. And what do you like to do outside of the construction arena that we passionately call the art of construction?
So I'm going to go back to I'm either on the water or I'm in the mountains. So I'm paddleboarding or I'm snowboarding.
Well, we'll get to hear your full story, but first, speed round. Rich, same questions for you. What's your favorite beverage?
Well, thanks, Devin. I appreciate being a part of this as well. As a resident of the Willamette Valley in Oregon, I'd probably be strung up if I didn't say Pinot Noir. So that's definitely true. I won't say it's not. I enjoy that wine year round, not just in any season.
Cool. And a favorite place you've traveled?
Like Dennis, I've been blessed to be able to travel several places, not so much around the world. I've been overseas, but I think that, you know, when I travel for fun, I really want to go somewhere where I can relax and kind of check out. And I would say that The times I've been to Maui have satisfied that. I really have enjoyed those trips. I've really been able to kind of distance myself from work and other stresses and just relax. And it's been terrific.
Cool. And your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction silos we're going to talk about breaking down that we call the art of construction?
Well, I do like to write. I mean, I'm a journalist as a profession, but I'm also a writer. So I do like to write creatively. That's probably one passion that I have, but more kind of physically, I love to play tennis and I'll play with anybody anytime and indoor, outdoor, it doesn't matter, but really love that game.
Outstanding. Well, we got to know a little bit about Dennis and Rich. Dennis, full name, give us your full name and your whole story that led you to being the president at the Housing Innovation Alliance.
So full name, Devin, Dennis James Steigerwalt II. We just, all right. the third, as we call him, Trip, is just now turning 6 years old. So we're continuing the tradition of the Steigerwalt name here. But so what led me through to the Alliance? So construction was like the second, my second chapter in my career, if you will. I got into the space in 2011, but it was really inspired through an internship that I had with a group called EQA Landmark Communities back in 2001 when I was at the University of Pittsburgh, where I had a chance to really get involved with a real estate development company that was doing some really interesting brownfield redevelopment in and around the city of Pittsburgh. So they were focused on taking all of the blighted steel mill sites on the riverfronts and reactivating them into these thriving elements of the, or thriving extensions of the existing communities. I actually live in one of those communities now here outside the city, so I can speak to it firsthand that much of the vision that was intended was maintained. So like just the idea of being able to go in and create something from these, what was otherwise considered waste areas, like was really exciting to me, and kind of the sense of community and place that you could create in doing that. Not only the societal benefits, but the economic component of it was really thrilling to me as a finance and marketing major. So fast forward, when the opportunity came in 2011 to get into the construction space, I took a bit of a management consulting gig with a group called Ibicus, also based in Pittsburgh. They took on a project in the Middle East, and I had the opportunity to start out as a project manager and kind of work my way into the industry in that way, primarily focused on projects in Saudi Arabia, at least in the first few, is 100% focused on that. And over the time, I ended up setting up their international operations based out of Dubai and ran that from 2011 to 2018. And a lot of that work was collaborative innovation around introducing new building products and technologies or kind of advanced systems in the construction industry, and setting up technology transfer programs to advance how we build homes in Saudi Arabia. So as a part of that, Rich and I had the pleasure of working together, and I'm sure he'll be able to share some of those stories as well. But Rich and I have been in the trenches quite a long time together. And we've had the opportunity to build the first net zero energy LEED Platinum house as a showcase of what can happen when you bring all the right minds together and you kind of set egos aside and do what's needed to create a symbol of what can be as it relates to how we build and how we create value for the economy and for the people in it. And then we also built a LEED Silver exhibition center, which created a showcase for us to kind of engage the local market around these technologies. So it wasn't just a demonstration home, but it was a physical extension of the business strategy to be able to bring people in and educate, demonstrate, and then kind of workshop how you implement and activate these things. When I boomeranged back to the US, it was an opportunity for me to take all that global knowledge and network and translate it into the US market. I had the opportunity to sync up with the Ibicus team, who's the founders of the Housing Innovation Alliance. And we were able to create an opportunity for me to come in and help grow the organization with that international network and look at ways that we could scale the kind of the reach of the audience that we have and the types of partnerships that we use within the organization to influence the housing industry. So I started that in 2019, had all the best laid plans. As we all know, in 2020, everybody's plans blew up and we had a whole nother set of realities to face. So the team and I have kind of been in this experimentation mode since then and have had a great time kind of learning the best ways to both digitally and physically engage with our audience as we try to drive key messages. And I think what we've done here and what I get most excited about is we've really created a unique knowledge exchange platform around strategic growth and innovation opportunities for the home building space. And that's you know, what unites all three of us here on this call today. It's what brought that whole panel together in Denver a few months ago. And it's, you know, it's the fuel that keeps us fired up as we go into the rest of this discussion. Then.
Yeah. And before I pass the baton to Rich, this Housing Innovation Alliance, go back to show 304 titled Connecting the Dots in Housing Innovation. And that's where we talked with Betsy and really got the full story of how the Housing Innovation Alliance became to be. So we've had several different podcasts kind of leading up to this conversation today, which is really focused on the offsite solutions and the offsite roadmap that here at the Art of Construction, where we speak as system built, and it's all this stuff coming together. And to do that, we need to have people that have been journaling and listening and conversing about that. And we have the honor to have Rich Bensaka here. What is your story that led you to become the editorial director at SGC Horizon?
To be honest, I guess I could date it back to when I was about 9 years old, collecting nails, loose nails at the as we added a den and a family room to our house in Northern California. I've always kind of been fascinated with construction job sites and the construction process, and had an opportunity in college to work on a home remodeling crew. I won't get into how I got on that crew because there's no real reason except the reason that it was that I knew someone and they took pity on me and gave me a summer job. I had no skills, really. I was a gopher for that crew, but really enjoyed working on the projects that we did and really watching skilled construction professionals do their job and just in wonder about how they were doing it. So was able to do that for the last 3 years of college and obviously, you know, was able to help myself a little bit financially, but also really gained some good experience and eventually was allowed to do some skilled trades with supervision, but knew that that was not my future. And I always wanted to be a journalist. And so I was able to leverage that a little bit into getting my first job at Builder Magazine, which at the time was the magazine of the National Association of Home Builders. It was published independently, but it was NAHB's magazine. And I was hired on there, worked there for 4 years, rose to be the senior editor of the building section. I was the only editor on staff that had actually worked in construction. Everybody else, you know, had business experience or government experience. So that kind of led me to that road. And then I worked for a remodeler. The guy that was my supervisor during the summers in college started his own business, and I went to work for him for a while. And then the 91 recession hit, and we decided to be friends instead of work colleagues. And I left the business and freelanced basically for 20 years for Builder, for Hanley Wood, its publisher, and for a bunch of other publications in the space, both consumer and trade. Did that and then was fortunate enough to have an opportunity to join Dennis and the team at Ibicus to work on this marketing initiative in Saudi Arabia, based in Saudi Arabia, moved myself and my family to Pittsburgh, and spent 2.5 great years there before coming back to Oregon. But really, as Dennis articulated, was very proud to be part of a really inspiring effort to bring innovation and showcase and actually construct and deliver innovation into the kingdom. It was something that literally had never been done before to actually follow through on an ambitious project like we had and gather the people that we did from around the world to be a part of it and come to Riyadh and be a part of that initiative. So that was a great moment. And the facilities that we created there, you know, I was basically the communications manager for that project and was in charge of delivering the content for the interactivity of that center and the home, and then working with our client to articulate that to the media and to key audiences. And so that was a different thing for me. But I think both my construction experience and my journalism experience really, really paid off there. And of course, working with Dennis and the rest of the team was just, it was fantastic. I mean, we were a very, very tight good team. And I don't know that I've had an experience like that since or before. So when that ended, I left Ibicus and kind of bounced around a little bit, did some work for associations and did some freelance work, and then got the opportunity to be the editor-in-chief of ProBuilder magazine, which is the other housing industry magazine for the U.S. home building industry, and then elevated to editorial director a few years ago. So I'm still editing ProBuilder, but now I'm overseeing three brands: ProBuilder, Custom Builder, and Residential Products Online. And I think, you know, having been in the industry, covered the industry for the better part of, you know, 30 years or so, I've written about labor issues, I've written about materials issues, supply chain issues, and it seems like there's a lot of things. I've written about offsite for 25 years. I've been touting systems built housing for, you know, a generation, and have been frustrated to see that the housing industry really hasn't taken it up en masse, but am encouraged and inspired by what I see from builders who are making the transition, who do see the benefit, who are realizing the benefit to their business and the competitive advantage that it can have. And so it's exciting to watch. And I think the factors in this industry are kind of leading us to that point where you're gonna have to, if you want to maintain a profitable, sustainable business.
Well said. And what we're going to kind of articulate here today is some conversations leading up to this, is that we had led a panel, which back to the first podcast episode was kind of all that put together at the Housing Innovation Alliance last year. And we'll kind of talk through today of where Dennis and the team is teeing this up. But I want to start by, Rich, saying you had put a slide on the screen that was a crazy amount of roads going all over the place. And you started by the conversation that I want to start by saying, what is the IC roadmap?
Well, the IC roadmap is a concept that Dennis and I came up with a couple of years ago, which was basically to give home builders of any size, any location, any price point, a literal roadmap to go and transition from stick building to an offsite solution, whether that's pre-cut, whether that's panelized, whether it's modular or you know, kind of cassette modular, whatever they feel is the best next move, and then getting them down that road. And so the roadmap isn't, you know, what you hope is that you have a roadmap that's kind of linear. What we found with the roadmap has many, many, many different twists and turns. And it's a difficult animal to get your hands around and really be an authority to builders who are resistant and builders who are, you know, very nervous about going into something that's a new territory, a new way to do their business. But we pitched it as, you know, a business transition, an operational level type of transition, so that it's not just about, you know, how you produce homes, it's how you run your business. So it's a big animal, but I think we've done a good job of developing content that will go into an eventual document that will be a guidebook for builders who are interested in making that transition.
So Rich, thanks for all that backstory. So you and Dennis are building these roadmaps, first who and then what, from these different brands, and ProBuilder, Housing Innovation Alliance, Design Build Working Groups, all these different things. Can you talk about what have you been up to recently as we kind of go down this conversation around focused of the offsite solutions?
Well, from ProBuilder's standpoint, you know, we're continuing to develop and to share content about offsite construction, offsite housing construction. And that could be, an article that we published in our May, June issue, which was design for offsite. We've kind of have this subtitle of a series, if you will, of articles called Housing Industrialized. And the last one we did was about design, and the kind of came out of research that we've done with our audience of home builders about what are the barriers to offsite. And you can kind of get a sense of, where their resistance is. And one of them was design flexibility, the perception that homes built in a factory can't be as design flexible, be as responsive to the market, allow changes. as stick-built homes. And so the article set out to, you know, kind of demystify more than debunk kind of that perception and talk to people who do feel like the design opportunities are basically endless. It's just a matter of, you know, can it be done at scale and things like that. So, and really what the end goal is, are we trying to provide housing that's affordable and high quality and well-built, you know, energy efficient, has a good operational kind of story? If that's what we're trying to do, then offsite's the answer. If we're stuck on building, you know, custom homes or semi-custom homes or very personalized homes, you know, maybe not, but those homes are not going to be affordable for the folks that really need it and not really fill the supply gap. So I think that, that's one story. And then we're working on another story to talk to builders who are actually in the transition at different points. So starting out kind of in the middle, others that have kind of made the leap and are doing it now, have gone from stick built to some sort of offsite method, to really kind of bring that as proof points to other builders and say, you know, this is their story. This is how they got through it or how they're getting through it. And really trying to, you know, make it real rather than theoretical.
Dennis, anything you'd add to that?
Yeah. So you mentioned, I think Rich did a great job of outlining kind of our approach and some of the areas that we've decided to dive into. I think, you know, you mentioned about the working groups and as Rich talked about when I first joined the Alliance in 2019, this is one of the areas where we really both wanted to be joined at the hip and getting this message out to the industry. And we started with these working groups that were kind of much broader conversations around risk and opportunity in the space and where we could achieve and unlock value. And as Rich mentioned, there's been a lot of editorial content that's been created. There's been a series of videos and panel sessions that have been hosted through the Housing Innovation Alliance that have been created. And what's really nice about what we're doing or interesting about what we're doing here with this roadmap is we're having constant ongoing dialogue with the industry. We're creating a lot of editorial content thanks to Rich and his team. We're getting a lot of really good, thoughtful and productive conversations amongst current and future partners around the topic, just like the panel session that we had out in Denver. And then we're also kind of a bit on a bit of a roadshow. It's about highlighting the opportunities and the partnerships that are activating them. And I think one of the, you know, whether it's at the International Builders Show, whether it's at the Building Systems Housing Summit in DC or ULI, we're constantly organizing panels around partnerships and conversations that can continue to raise awareness and advocate for the ways in which this can work. So it brings that roadmap to life as well for those in-person experiences. And I'll tell you, one of the most interesting things that I've seen over the last 4 years since we've been doing this is I've been with the same organizations saying a similar message where in 2019, it just didn't land. Where in 2022, you couldn't clear us out of the room because there were so many people that wanted to continue the conversation. So I think this speaks to it. And we're like, I don't want to say we're at peak curiosity, but we're definitely have offsite curious or industrialized construction leveraging prefab solutions where there is a lot of interest in the market. I think the next step for the roadmap, and I know you're going to get into, Rich is going to talk about some of the barriers that we've uncovered and some of the things is really how do we convert curiosity into adoption and application, right? And because I think we've seen some data recently that is a bit frustrating for me from the process that we've been going through where, you know, curiosity may be at an all-time high, yet adoption is at historical lows. And I think that's something that we need to reconcile with and kind of talk through. And that's probably another opportunity for even a future podcast as we get into those details. But, you know, I just wanted to add that bit about what we're doing to bring this roadmap to life.
Totally. Yeah. Like when there's so many acronyms in our industry and you need to have people that are running between the raindrops of like, okay, what are these misconceptions out there? And then I loved your talking track, Dennis, about turning curiosity into adoption. And what I heard from you talking is about, we have to figure out these transition points and utilize working groups. And it's all about educational content. That's when I started learning about Housing Innovation Alliance and the people of the group of innovators. And the key word is group, because you can't innovate alone, and putting that all together. And Dennis, you talked about 2019 was crickets in the room, to then 2022, it's a full room of curiosity. But now we've been going down this journey together of here we are recording this in 2023, teeing up the conference in 2024. So what I want to do is have Rich, you kind of talk from the data point of view, and then Dennis kind of talk a little bit more about the working groups and some, you know, you correct me if I'm wrong, you were just like in Salt Lake or different areas where you guys have been on the road on different projects of kind of what's been, what you've been up to from the recording and the sessions that we did in Denver in 2023, and then kind of talk about where we're going with 2024. So Rich, can you talk about kind of the data that you've seen to kind of shed some light around this?
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple of things that we do, the primary way that we've conducted our own research about it, we also look at census and how they track it. And I think that, you know, there's some issues with how census tracks offsite data, panelization and modular. But you know, there's one data point, but we also survey our readers every year to forecast the coming year. So we just completed that survey process for the 2024 forecast, which is going to publish in our November, December issue. And it's interesting to look at the trajectory of interest and where homebuilders see the opportunities for the coming year. So I can just reveal this is that, you know, modular and offsite construction methods are the number two opportunity that builders identify, growth opportunity that they identify for 2024. And we're talking about, you know, 900 or so respondents to this survey. So not, you know, certainly not the industry, but certainly a statistically decent number or percentage that can be relied on. So, you know, that's impressive. And that's gone from, you know, little less than 8% 3 years ago to, you know, 22-23% now. So as Dennis, you know, I think alluded to, there is curiosity, there is interest, and there is true kind of, you know, respect for the fact that this is a growth opportunity for you. And I think what dovetails that is other data that shows that, you know, the pressures that drive offsite construction or systems built construction, things like higher material costs, higher labor costs, difficulty finding qualified labor. Those are the top three challenges that builders have stated to us for them in the coming year. Those are basically what the top three have been for the last 3 or 4 years that I've done the survey. So, so it's not, those pressures aren't going away. And I think it's finally leading more and more builders to be at least curious, but even more to kind of start to take action. I think, you know, Dennis alluded to the barriers of offsite. We're kind of, we seem to be kind of chasing the tail. So we use that stat, which we get again from this forecast survey, to talk about, you know, to kind of identify stories that we can tell that address some of the pain points or the barriers that builders perceive or are experiencing to incorporating or transitioning to offsite. What's interesting is that, you know, it's all over the map. They get to choose. They have to pick one of the survey, basically what's the biggest barrier. So they can only pick one, but every year it's kind of a different one that rises to the top. And this year for 2024, it's basically their complaint is that there's untrained or a different or new set of trades that have to do this. And again, respecting the fact that they're having hard enough time finding trades, it's going out and finding different trades to do this. And so, you know, that's an issue that we'll talk about. We'll wrap some content around that and talk to trades and talk to providers and talk to builders about, you know, where did you find the labor and how did you retrain or train your existing labor to do this? How much of a pain point was that really? But other things that we've talked about and we've developed content around are, you know, the code issue. You know, state and local building codes and inspectors aren't as familiar with this type of technology. And they have a hard time, you know, kind of passing a building. So so that's a barrier. I think it was as we addressed last year when we talked about consumer perceptions of offsite and factory built housing. That's something that builders are less and less likely to see as a barrier, but in years past saw it as a bigger barrier. And we kind of addressed that and kind of did kind of debunk that. That's really not a perception that the consumers, at least younger consumers, have about these types of homes. They don't really care how it's built. They don't really care. They just want a house that they can afford and a house that's of good quality, which, you know, theoretically, and even in practice, offsite construction delivers. So, you know, we use these kind of barriers, the research that we get from this, to kind of help us understand what topics we want to talk to the building group or the working group about and develop content around.
Awesome. I'm excited to get that upcoming data, and then we can unpack that as things evolve and then have good conversations. Dennis, can you talk about what kind of exciting things have been happening around the Housing Innovation Alliance?
Yeah, I mean, I hope we have enough time for all that, Devin. I mean, we've been after it. As you know, we run fast. I mean, Rich and I have been working on a number of things quietly in the background here as well. But so I think I'll break it into kind of two key categories. So we've talked a number of times in reference to summits. So I think, you know, we have our in-person events where we bring people together, and again, around the strategic growth and innovation opportunities, talking about threats and how we unlock new value together, all with the idea in mind of how do we increase the supply of more attainable housing, right? And for us, the summit is a major moment in time, but we also have these fantastic road trips, these innovation and action road trips that we host throughout the course of the year. They're a bit smaller format. If our summit is like going to your friend's wedding, where you have 3 days to get to know everybody, and there's just around a few hundred people, and you do get to know everybody by the time you go, the road trips, it reminds me a bit of like the old college road trip where you lock everybody in a car for 8 hours. You really get to know a lot about one another. So, you know, we go into specific markets. You know, we just had one in Salt Lake City, which was a fantastic opportunity to meet up with our friends over at EBA and connect with the teams at Woodside Homes, Ivory Innovations, and BAMCOR, and a couple of others in the local market. But the idea is, how do we get in there and pull the curtain back a little bit on what's happening with forward-thinking municipalities on land use and policy reform? What are some of the new and emerging technologies that are being developed? Who are the front runners from a home building and development perspective? And what are they doing to create a more resilient business? So one, you get to see some really unique things in the field. But two, you have some great conversations with about 60 business leaders from across the country that fly in to participate in these experiences. So it's a great way to kind of get out of the business and be up on it for a day and a half. So those, between that and the summit, those are our big things. We obviously conduct a number of social events around some of the other big industry activities, like the International Builders Show. Had some great things in the Show Village last year. I'm sure we'll get a chance to do those again this year, or in 2024 at least. And then we also, we're really looking at how we create tools and resources that help for better decision-making with the C-suite and even with division presidents, right? So the idea is, we've talked about our offsite roadmap, our offsite heat map that we developed, which is a way for us to showcase what are the production capacities when we think about factory-built systems across the country. What's happening from a panelized perspective? What are the materials being used? What's going on with a volumetric modular perspective? Where are the bathroom pods or kitchen pods being produced? And you created this kind of inventory of what's happening in the U.S., both for builders to understand capacity, building product manufacturers to make connections, but then also for investors to understand where they could help scale this component of the industry. So we've leveraged what we learned building the offsite heat map, and we've gone into developing what we'll call the talent development and training map, or talent training and development map. And this is really for our opportunity to promote housing as a career opportunity. And this is kind of delayering all of the different ways in which you can participate in the housing industry and its related industries, and really getting into trade education as well as construction management. So we've created a map that identifies training programs all across the country. We've done this in partnership with the University of Denver, Hall Williams Executive Search, and the Building Talent Foundation, and a couple other partners that have been supporting this. But you can find this on our website, housinginnovationalliance.com, and then go to the dig in section and you'll see these tools. The offsite heat map is in there, as well as this one. But it really gives you an opportunity to see, if you're interested in getting into the industry, where are the training and education programs that are available to you? And we're going to continue to expand on this through our work with the University of Denver and the National Housing Endowment to showcase more of these opportunities. So for us, it's about bringing people together. As I said, we are a knowledge exchange platform. But it's really also then giving you the tools and resources you need to make more constructive and quicker decisions as an organization. So I'd say those are some of the big things. You've already mentioned I don't know if now is the right time, but I can highlight as well what's going to go on with the summit next year.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, because and before you do that, I just I want to make sure you guys are like really what I've loved about you're saying here's the problem and here's where it's fragmented and here are tools to put that stuff together, right? Because it is challenging, right? If you do say, I want to raise my hand and figure out how to change, but how do I do that, right? And the different meetups are the ways to do that. So that's really the part that I want to make sure I, as a big fan of the Housing Innovation Alliance, who has got involved with it last year and excited for all the stuff that I've been hearing about for the next one, can you kind of talk through that and the stuff people could get involved with now, especially people who have some new innovations that they may want to talk about, Dennis?
Yeah, so I don't want to kind of create a spoiler for all of the great things that are to come with the next summit, but I will say that we've launched the event page, so we're going to start to update that on a regular basis. The 2024 summit will be the first week of June, and we'll be looking forward to, you know, 3 days at the University of Denver's campus again at the Cable Center, where we'll be showcasing innovative technologies and emerging kind of concepts in the space. We're going to have a lot of table level working discussions around topics that we're showcasing through panel sessions or through kind of keynote type speeches. And we're going to package that up again with those innovation action tours that I mentioned. So you'll see more details on that. But I want to highlight where you were going right when we started this is that Pitch Fest. And that's housingpitchfest.com is an opportunity to get involved. But this is our startup competition. So there's a lot of activity in like the early stage company space right now around the AEC, if you will. But I think we're one of the unique places where we are very specifically focused on what's going on within the home builder's operating environment. So what's nice is we bring together a great set of judges that represent a number of potential strategic builders and just thought leaders across the space to help us assess companies that are submitted through the PitchFest application process. So if you get a chance, you know, anything we can do to continue to bring more awareness to the companies and the founders that are investing their time and energy to help make our industry a better one and to create a better built environment for the consumer, we encourage them to jump on in. Applications are open through it's January 19th. So we have just under 90 days from where we're at today to get more folks in. And that will again be, we'll be announcing the short list of contenders going into that one day pitch off, if you will, right at the beginning of our summit. So we're excited. It's the second year that we've done it. First year was a huge success from the founder's perspective. And it was in the same venue. We're looking forward to even more of a response this year.
Yeah. And one thing I'd love to add, and maybe Rich could circle back, is that it brings so much new awareness to it when people are presenting that way. I think about AOC show 318 that really formulated out of the Housing Innovation Alliance that was titled A World Built with Grass, which I got to meet Josh Dorfman from Planted at the last Housing Innovation Alliance. And then you learn from these new companies that are now really building and making change in a great way through that group. And that's really starts from those type of seeds literally are being planted like the company Planted. And then you learn about how many challenges they had to go through to make that thing all come together. But it's these different MVPs and people coming together. Anything you'd add to that, Rich?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, I tell people there's two events that I really look forward to going to every year. And one of them is the Housing Innovation Alliance Summit, wherever and whenever it is, I want to be there because, you know, as much as I have an interest in offsite, I really more have an interest in where this industry is going and where innovation is coming from. And, you know, Dennis mentioned Ivory Innovations, and I think, you know, the Alliance does a lot too to bring, real innovation, companies that have a real solution and are just looking to find a foothold in this industry and discovering that is difficult. It's a fairly rigid industry in terms of adopting innovation, but that there are ways to get in. And I think the Pitch Fest is just an inspiring opportunity to not only, you know, learn about these guys, but then follow up with them and hear more of their story and let them tell their story to a broader audience. We've been happy to profile a number of them in ProBuilder. And I think it really just gives our audience pause, and it's thought provoking and kind of challenges their status quo. And it's all good. I think that, you know, if you're not willing to challenge your status quo and or admit that your status quo might need a little tweaking, then you're probably not going to last very long, at least in the future that I see for this industry. So it's just a great event. And the Pitch Fest, which was the first time was this year, was just a great opportunity to kind of hear about and see the passion and the ideas and the innovation that these guys have.
Yeah, and I commend you both and the team at Housing Innovation Alliance to not just rinse and repeat and be stagnant and continue to try new things. Dennis and then Rich, what would you like to see more of when it comes to offsite solutions?
For me, it's not just on offsite, but it's kind of a broader story around creating space for innovation to happen within your business. Really, we've talked about this being like, what's your R&D budget look like? When I first came back from working overseas, you know, the McKinsey report was kind of just released, the 2017 State of the Industry report on construction from McKinsey was released. And, you know, that was referenced at all the construction events and still is today as kind of helping us understand where we've fallen behind. But my thing has been, ever since I've hit the ground in here, there's a number of organizations, and I find more every day, which is super fulfilling for me and the work we do here at the Alliance, that are actually, they're really cutting edge and they're doing things. They're organized to do things differently than the profile that is painted in that report, let's say. And what I mean is there are companies that have figured out ways to create that space within their organization to experiment with, and have the freedom to fail. And what a lot of them have found, at least in the work that we've looked at, is that freedom to fail has had some really exciting knock-on effects where they may have a long path to a victory in one situation, but the things they've learned along the way have come out to help them several years down the road in their business because of the things they experimented early on. There's been things that they thought were going to be longer paths that they were able to accomplish quite easily and implement and integrate. So I think it's because they have a consistent and measured model for being able to invest in themselves in this level of experimentation. Well, there's another component of the business that's focused on optimization, you know, continuing to refine the business, focused on operational excellence, finding ways to responsibly grow margin. And then on the other side, you have the higher risk, higher opportunity type things that are happening and experimenting, exploring, and then being able to weave them back in. So for me, when you ask that question, I think about just working with organizations in our network and within the broader industry. And if there's any out there listening to this, please reach out to us. We're happy to get to know you. The idea for us is let us work with you. Let us shine a light on what's working within your business. Let us help you find partners so that you can create that space for research and development within your business and have that as a dedicated or as a commitment going forward so that you can continue to build a more resilient business.
I love that. What resonated with me when you said create space for innovation with freedom to fail, but then you back that up, well, making sure you have data and you show optimizations so that you are showing increased profits and efficiencies of where you give that freedom. And then that's what this group I've really found is where you can come back and say, here's where it worked and didn't work, because you don't have enough time or money to make all the mistakes and freedom to try everything yourself, right?
Right, no, 100%. But there's all, and part of this too is getting really smart about how you subsidize these activities. There's tax credits out there. There's grant opportunities for partnerships with universities. The government has initiatives out there where they're releasing research opportunities and awards all the time in this space. So I think understanding how you can capture some of that capital that is there to de-risk your business, and then also understanding how you incentivize the organization, to your point, to integrate and then optimize what you've learned in that is really critical.
Rich, what would you like to see more when it comes to offsite solutions?
Well, I would echo Dennis. Certainly, I think from an operational standpoint, what I'm seeing is working, and it's among a growing number of builders, as Dennis alluded to, that are really able to make this transition or feel confident and have kind of done it the right way, if you will. And that is to basically break out the offsite or systems built component of construction, production, purchasing, the whole, you know, almost create a separate operation that's going to look into that and is going to take it slow, is going to be properly funded, either privately or through other means or both. And allowed to kind of figure it out to the point where they can then say, okay, we're ready to produce. Now, why that's effective is because as a separate entity, they've left the legacy entity basically alone to do the work that they know how to do and to produce homes and generate revenue and profit, and just kind of go along as they have been. But then find ways to start now transitioning to this system because they've worked the bugs out or bugs out enough that they can confidently say, well, we can do some of that production or we can do more of that production. And so I'd like to see, you know, builders follow that kind of model, as Dennis said, you know, kind of investing properly in this, but not feeling as though they have to ditch what they're doing right away to go to this. I think part of the roadmap is going to be that lesson of, you know, if you really want to do this, you've almost got to create this other company that kind of makes the mistakes and works through the bugs and finds the right solution for what you do. And you may find that it isn't going to work, and that's okay because it didn't really affect the core business. I think the other thing I'd like to see is the kind of prop tech investor money come into this industry more. I think there is money out there for innovation and disruption in this industry. I think that builders, you know, aren't good at looking at that, or encouraging it or lobbying or trying to get it. And I think it's because it's looked upon as an industry that is not very innovative and doesn't know how to talk that talk or walk that walk. But I think that builders that are interested in making this move, and I think that when you look at the middle market, the middle part of the market, and by that I mean the medium-sized production home builders, the guys that are doing, you know, 200 to 500 units a year, who are really getting squeezed by the labor issues and materials cost issues and supply chain issues and all the other things that are putting pressure on them, both mostly from above, the larger builders who are, you know, have the means, maybe even public means to kind of, you know, continue to kind of outbid them for land or whatever it is. Is that, you know, they're going to have to find ways to fund this transition. And I think that there is venture capital money out there for them if they're willing to kind of really make the leap. So I'm hoping that kind of comes into it more and really starts to take effect.
I love that. And we talked about that in episode one, where we had two different verticals, if you will, with Fading West being full volumetric, and DL Cohen, who currently is just doing offsite framing, but they have done full volumetric in the past. And Ross and I talk a lot about that recently, about kind of break it out from what you're doing today until you're really ready, but then working through partners in a group like the Housing Innovation Alliance, because the rising tides float all boats as we all come together. And I totally agree that people who are living it, but you know, how to eat that elephant one bite at a time and doing this in paradigm shifts versus the people that go all in from one way to another way. That's really hard to get everybody to row in the same direction that way. You don't know what you don't know, and you're jaded by what you think you know. I deal with it in every conversation, and that's what we're, but the perspectives that you guys are bringing to the table is that you're hearing these different sides and the push and pull of the strategies of how you're actually executing those strategies, right, Rich?
Yeah, I think that, you know, and Dennis talked about this with the McKinsey report. You look at other industries and they look at housing and they go, this is insane. Why would you why are you still building your products in the field? You're the only major product that's built in front of people. I mean, it's craziness. And you work through weather and you work through, you know, labor issues, and, you know, maybe you don't have a union to deal with like the auto industry or whoever, but, It's just kind of crazy. So even within the industry, but certainly outside the industry, you know, the housing is looked upon, or construction to some degree is looked upon as very backwards and messy. I was going to say too, that I think that, you know, builders have to start to be willing to give up sacred cows and kill them off. I think that builders hang on to those. They think that there's, that this is, has to be the only way to do it because it's been the way they've done it for, you know, a century or more. But I think, you know, if you really want to make change, you have to be willing to sacrifice sacred cows. And those are all over the place in our industry.
Well, as we work to move this thing forward, what is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
As much as we try to forecast and we kind of look at forecasts and ask our builders to forecast, I think it's always a little dubious and dangerous to kind of look into a crystal ball. And what I'm hoping is kind of it's a weird hope. I'm hoping that the pressures that are chronic pressures on this industry, that things that not just are pandemic induced or kind of in the wake of the pandemic, but really are ongoing and have been for a generation or more, the labor issue specifically, is that it causes enough of a pain point that builders are forced to either go out of business or change, sink or swim. And I hate to say that because there's some great builders that'll probably be lost in that wave out. But I just feel like I don't know what else is going to really push the industry into this. If I really had a crystal ball, and I made a presentation about this last week to a group of builders, big builders, large production builders. And Dennis knows this story really well, or this analogy well. But what if one of the big tech companies, Apple, Google, Amazon, Tesla, decide to become home builders? And disruption comes from outside the industry that basically upends the industry completely. A company that can come in and do what the industry will not or cannot at this point to deliver affordable, high quality housing. That's a very compelling kind of question to ask. And I can see it happening. I just don't know if it will.
Dennis, anything you'd add to that?
As an entrepreneur and as someone who invests in some early stage companies in the space myself, I kind of look at things, what is the risk and what is the opportunity? And I think, as Rich was talking about, I think we have some systemic issues in the industry that are, you know, creating this really unique moment in time for us to kind of reflect on how we got to where we are, embrace the best of that, and start to shed some of the weight that we don't need and look at other ways to kind of move forward. So I'll look at that through two lenses. So one, the big builders are getting bigger. This doesn't slow down, I don't think, the next 24 months. It doesn't stop. It'll slow, but it doesn't stop, right? With the interest rate environment, what it is, you're going to continue to see the growth. And I think in order for companies of this size to continue to deliver the volume they want to and to continue to scale, alternative methods and materials and integrating more technologies that allow them to kind of optimize their back end and remove some of the thrash and communication and coordination is going to have to happen. It's going to be a forcing function for that, where Rich was going. Then I look through the lens of the other side and I say, all right, so if we want to recruit and get more people excited about entering into the space, there's a lot of the kind of the new generation of builder that I talk to that are saying, well, I want to do things differently out the gate. I'm going to, your business, you do what you're organized to do, right? And I think what you're going to see is these businesses organizing themselves a different way out the gate. And you're seeing it with the builders, you're seeing it with the trades. There is an incentive and an interest to learn and excite. And I think that exists across the industry. There's like one thing we have to make sure we say, and this industry does love to share information. You used the word tribe earlier, Devin, about the AOC. And one of the things I noticed, like when you get into the systems built world, that's a very tight tribe that loves to share information. All the builders in our network, when we bring them together, everybody's openly sharing and trying to figure out how to help one another to get ahead, right? Because there's so much demand there and there's enough challenges to overcome and opportunities to unlock that we no one organization can do it on its own. And some are going to have different competitive advantages over others. But I think when you start thinking about the new players coming in, I talked about the big players. I think when the new ones come in, they're going to start to organize themselves differently. And again, that's going to create a space for, you know, folks in the 100 to 350 starts, 500 to 1,000 starts to look at technology adoption in a different way. And we're seeing solutions be introduced to the market at a speed like we never have before. And connectivity amongst the workforce is at levels it's never been. So I just think that we're kind of hitting that. We're just starting to hit that sweet spot. And the market forces are going to cause that risk to opportunity equation to start to fall more in line where that it's worth taking the risk to capture the opportunity, or to Rich's point, you may not be here tomorrow.
Yeah. And that's just the reality that I really appreciate you guys pointing out. Right. And the final question we always ask, and I want to make sure I put it out there one more time, is we'll put links in the show notes of the Pitch Fest coming up. If you have a new innovative, this is the place where you want to get involved, as well as the, you know, the different events, especially the one coming up next June. Art of Construction is honored to be part of that and help be part of the overall story. And I love how Housing Innovation Alliance is involved with so many different organizations. But as we talk about the riches and the niches to leave people thinking as they go out there of all the different perspectives we put out there, Dennis and then Rich, bring us home. What is that one thing you want to leave our builders and affiliates to think about as they go out there to crush it and grow their business?
Pick something, place a bet, give it a shot, run it home, fail fast, pick something else, or run it down and unlock that opportunity, but pick something.
Rich, final thoughts?
Yeah, I would say similarly, just be willing to look outside of your comfort zone. Just, you know, don't stay locked in with what you're doing. Every time we talk to builders, no matter what the market conditions are, there's always a reason why they can't or won't look outside of their own business and their own processes. And I think just look outside yourself and see what else is there, and then follow what Dennis said. Pick something and go for it.
I love it. Dennis, Rich, thank you guys so much for coming in and sharing your story.
Thank you.